Welcome to this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb. Right now we're going to talk with a doctor who's also a lawyer. His name is Dr. Larry Schlachter. He's a board-certified neurosurgeon. And as this nation grapples with the issue of Obamacare, repealing it, replacing it, whatever, this doctor, Dr. Schlachter, says that we must remember, first and foremost, safety patients. He's written a new book called Malpractice, A Neurosurgeon Reveals How Our Healthcare System Puts Patients at Risk. His website is LarrySchlachter.com, and Schlachter is spelled S-C-H-L-A-C-H-T-E-R. Dr. Schlachter, thank you for joining us on Vocal Point.
My pleasure.
Okay, so tell us about the problem of malpractice in America and patients' safety, or the lack thereof.
Okay, so let's start off with saying that we have the best trained doctors in the world and the best systems and the best technology, and we're very lucky to live in this country. And most doctors are extremely dedicated and hardworking, and I'm one of them. Now, unfortunately, the latest study that I've seen on this came out of Johns Hopkins about 3 months ago, and it said that the third leading cause of death in America after cancer and heart disease is medical error. And I was shocked. I mean, I knew it was pretty bad since the institution came out with studies literally 15 years ago. So I practiced neurosurgery after a seven-year residency into my 50s, and I got injured and had to stop operating. So I went to law school. And when I got out of law school, I started representing people who were injured in the hospital. And I was shocked at what I was seeing. And so I've written this book based on the experiences I've had of a doctor who became a lawyer and my values and spiritual values about patients being treated the right way and there being some ethics about telling people what happened to them. And also because someone needs to ring the bell about what's going on and demand accountability to make patient care safer. Everybody's in favor of safer patient care. So that's what the book's about, and that's what I'm promoting. Now, interestingly, it took me over 3 years to write the book. I didn't know that we were going to have an election at the time the book came out, and I didn't know who was going to win the election or what they would be thinking. So the two have actually collided in a very interesting way.
Now, would you say, do I understand you correctly, that about 250,000 Americans die every year basically because of medical errors?
Yes. And those are not my numbers. Those are numbers published by others.
I understand
yes,
that in 19...
That's correct.
Okay. In 1999, the Institute of Medicine released a landmark report called To Err Is Human. They said at that time, 1999, as many as 98,000 patients were dying every year owing to avoidable medical error. More recent research indicates that that estimate was, if anything, actually a drastic understatement. What kind of accidents are these?
Well, I could tell you stories all day long. So I'll give you an example.
Sure.
An example is someone comes into the hospital with a headache and gets a CT scan that the radiologist reads as normal or really abnormal, and the neurologist comes by to do a consult but never looks at the pictures himself, relies on what the radiologist says, and never spends 2 minutes to look at the pictures. Because in the case I had, the patient had this horrible brain swelling and a benign tumor that could have been taken out. And within 48 hours, because nobody looked.
You know, unfortunately, your cell phone or whatever, the connection is not always good. So did you say that that patient died within 48 hours?
Yes.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, is it a little better now?
Try and just stay in the good cell. Yeah. So another example.
I will. I won't move.
Okay.
Another example is a patient who had a neck operation, and everything went well, but they developed some swelling and some bleeding in the front of their neck, And they came into the emergency room at 2 in the morning. And by midday, they had hardly been examined by anyone who knew what they were doing because the surgeon didn't show up very quickly.
And it what?
The patient suffered. It obstructed the trachea, the airway.
Yeah.
And the patient got lack of oxygen to the brain and became profoundly brain damaged.
Oh, man.
That's another example.
What happened to you? You said you were injured somehow?
You know, I used to play in a baseball league. I used to travel around the country playing hardball into my 50s. It was crazy. So I got to play in 8 major league stadiums with a great bunch of guys. And I was pitching, and a guy hit a line drive 100 miles an hour up the middle.
Oof.
And it hit my operating hand and broke 4 bones in my hand.
Mm.
So I couldn't operate anymore after that. And I was devastated. I was a patient. I had 3 or 4 surgeries. And one day my wife said, "You're going to get out of the house. You got to go do something." So I started going to law school at night just to, you know, see what I thought. I had a lot of fun doing that.
Hmm.
It actually was good for me. And I wound up starting this whole new profession and combining my experience as a neurosurgeon with my law degree.
But it's interesting because if you think about it, certainly some lawyers make other lawyers look bad, you know, in terms of the ambulance chasing or things like that, as opposed to those who really do care about patients who've been injured and so forth. Could you address that, though?
Yes.
The ambulance chasing side, yeah.
Yeah, so there's a lot of competition out there in the accident world, which I don't do, by the way. I'm not an accident personal injury lawyer. So people are advertising. They're on TV. They look, you know, it looks like ambulance chasing. It looks like they're promoting business and looking, you know, to... The public gets the impression that they're not doing the right thing. In my business, you know, I turn away more cases than I take. And I'll only take a case if I feel like my mother would tell me I'm doing the right thing. I've got a feeling in my heart. I have to have a passion that I'm doing the right thing to make the care better for the next patient and to do the right thing for the injured patient. But, you know, attorneys really need to... do everything they can to appear to the public to be more, like the corner grocer, you know, yeah. Someone you trust, right?
Sure. Okay. What are your thoughts on tort reform when it comes to how we repeal and replace Obamacare or whatever the country decides ultimately to do when it comes to our healthcare system? Tort reform.
Okay,
where does that fit?
Tort reform means that you limit the amount of money someone can recover for pain and suffering, that you might compensate them for income lost. So what that means is that if you're old or disabled or if you're a child and you have no stream of income, you might be limited to $250,000 of recovery for a horrible injury, whereas if you were hit by a truck going through a red light, you might get $5 or $10 million. So because you're in a medical accident, you don't get what you deserve. Now, I don't think that's fair. I think if we had more safety reform, we would eliminate malpractice. The cost of medicine would go down, and it would be overall helpful. Tort reform, the costs of litigation and the costs of the whole process is less than 0.5% of the national healthcare budget.
Hmm.
It's a very small amount, and tort reform is not going to do anything to lower healthcare costs across the board. That's what my research has shown, and that's my position on this, that we have a safety epidemic, not a tort epidemic.
Okay, let's suppose you were in charge of a hospital or something like that, and you had the opportunity to somehow put into place safety reform measures at your hospital. What would you do? What would you do differently?
Well, many of the hospitals now are actually instituting systematic safety reforms and doing a reasonably good job of it. In fact, Medicare is penalizing hospitals for not coming through and preventing what they call never events. Like, for example, someone should never develop an ulcer from pressure while they're in the hospital. Now, what I would do is I would only have good doctors on staff who have a good history. I would also have accountability when they go wrong. That's not hidden from the public. You know, there's peer review in the hospital where the hospital can review what went on, but no one able to see it. So I would make it where patients become a shareholder in their own care, that they're entitled to know what happened, right or wrong, and they're entitled to a good explanation and to support. And hospitals that have done that have found that their litigation expenses have dramatically decreased, because people really don't want to sue their healthcare provider. That's not why they're in the hospital. They're sick, they're afraid, they're vulnerable, and they appreciate having honesty and support rather than deny and defend kind of my mindset.
Huh. Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Just on a personal note, if I could tell this story, I used to receive allergy shots, and there was a situation where the medical provider gave me an allergy shot, and it turned out it was an error. And I received 10 times the dosage that my body was used to, and I went into something called anaphylactic shock, and I ended up in the hospital for a few days. But the medical providers in that particular instance came to me, and they were honest with me that this was a medical mistake. We retraced our steps. This is the only thing we figured out. We gave you this shot when you should have had this other shot that was 10 times less powerful in its dosage, and we're sorry, and we're going to cover your expenses in this.
Yes.
And so
yes.
This turned out to be, you know, such a blessing. You know, we had a beautiful prayer service actually in the hospital room, and you know, wonderful time. But I appreciated their honesty and even coming forward to help offset all the costs involved in this. But it was really an amazing thing. But too bad more experiences aren't like that with a positive resolution.
I mean, you are describing some very good people. I love to hear a story like that. How nice. And fortunately, you came out of it okay, right?
Lord willing, yes. I hope so. Yes, yes.
Yeah, I mean, you didn't have brain damage.
You were
normal, right? So, if a patient came to me and wanted to sue a hospital or a doctor over this kind of mistake, I would not become their lawyer.
Hmm.
I would tell them how lucky they were that they got through this okay. Now, what hospitals are doing now so that this doesn't happen again is they're starting to barcode medicines. In other words, it's not just the nurse checking your name and checking the medicine. They actually barcode it so that it can get picked up before it's administered.
Mm.
That's one way to stop this from happening again.
Mm-hmm.
But I love the story.
All right. We have about a minute left. What do you want to say in conclusion about malpractice, your book?
Well, I hope that it leads to a safer experience in American hospitals. I want it to inspire patients and their families to ask more questions that start with the word why. Why are you doing this? What's the reason? And what did the test show? And what are you thinking? And if those kinds of questions are asked more by patients, we're going to have that big number is going to go down a lot. Hmm. And so is the cost of all the cost of the crisis is going to diminish.
Hmm.
That's
excellent.
What I think.
Okay, excellent. Thank you so much for being with us. Again, the name of the book is Malpractice. The subtitle is A Neurosurgeon Reveals How Our Healthcare System Puts Patients at Risk. And the website for more information on the book and other matters similar is Larry Schlachter, S-C-H-L-A-C-H-T-O-T-E-R.
T-E-R.
Right, .com. Thank you so much, Dr. Schlachter, for being with us.
And thank you for inviting me. Have a good day.
You too. Bye-bye.